Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 1025. This is, okay, we're going to try again. I've been on vacation. It is 10 minutes after 12 o'clock in the afternoon, Tuesday afternoon. Thanks very much, everyone, for tuning into the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday. A little bit later, we're going to talk to a Wall Street Journal reporter, Liz Hoffman. Would you bank with Amazon? Amazon's moving toward that in a way, a pay system other than just Amazon Pay, but partnering in a way that you might someday write checks through Amazon. We'll talk to her about that. But let's save as much time as we can and start right in with John Najarian, who joins us on a phone line now. You see John from time to time on the Halftime Report on CNBC, and also follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much, Stephen. That's a great lead-in, not just to me, but to you on your program. I love the introduction.
Yeah, Chris Duffy, he's a magician. If I could only read a clock, we'd be perfect, John.
You do just fine.
Hey, so, you know, when you're coming up on the program, I'm always a little more keen on what's happening on Wall Street and also what's happening on the Halftime Report, because it seems like a lot of times that impacts things. I'm just wondering, Larry Kudlow spoke about the future of Gary Cohn about 30, 40 minutes ago, and it seemed to correspond to an increase in the Dow. Now, you tell me, did that have anything to do with it?
I think it did. Not just Mr. Kudlow, who I have immense respect for as well, but the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, is again out saying that he believes that there is some flexibility. I'm not sure if that's exactly the term he used, but more or less, in other words, rather than being locked into it's tariffs on everybody, 25 and 10 for steel and aluminum tariffs immediately when the president declares it, it's sounding like the president might be a little more flexible. And perhaps some of that flexibility is not just Speaker Ryan, but Gary Cohen, who is a trusted advisor of the president and has been very adamant that this is not the way we should go.
Okay, so but Cohen had, they said, might resign over this. I think I saw a headline that said the president expected him to. Kudlow was the sort of guy who might have moved into Cohen's job. So it all seems to be oddly interrelated here.
In many ways, yes. But Larry said on our show, and it sounded like you were watching it as well, that he has spoken to a number of people in the administration. One that he refused to name was Mr. Ross, Wilbur Ross, of course, mm-hmm. Commerce Secretary, or the president himself. But he said he has spoken with Mr. Cohen and encouraged him to stay and said how important it is for him to stay. In other words, I don't think Larry's seeking that job, that advisory right. role that Mr. Cohen presently occupies. So he expressed both hope and, based on his conversations with Mr. Cohen, optimism that he is going to stay.
I was away last weekend, so I don't know if I have my dates exact. I don't know if the tariffs, the president's announcement had come before you were on last Tuesday or not, but what do you make of it? The trade partnership today out with a study, or maybe it was yesterday, saying that 33,464 jobs would be gained because of these tariffs. 179,000 would be lost.
Yeah, I'll leave those numbers to the people that estimated them, Stephen. I just don't think it's a good idea. I think the impact on you've probably seen the numbers as far as on the average U.S. car has about a ton of steel. So it's an impact, if the tariffs were to be in place, it could be an impact of about $170 more per car, but that's on a $36,000 vehicle that they based all this on. In other words, I think overall the numbers are small, and the question is, okay, but what's the retaliation out of Europe and other big trading blocks, whether it's somewhere in the Pacific or whether it's Asia itself and China in particular, what are the impacts that could be rolled out against us? So So in other words, if it's a trade-off of, as you just described, 5-1 against us,
right,
for that, that doesn't sound like winning to me. And I don't think trade wars are a good thing in any case. I'd like to see us negotiate rather than go to a trade war.
I don't want to preview too much of what we're going to talk about later in the show, but there's the argument that he's doing this, that the people who really benefit from this are the executives at the steel companies who are already overcompensated. Okay, we'll kick that around later. But for right now, if most people think it's not a good idea, why does the president think it is?
He's got an advisor that, unlike Mr. Cohen, the other guy is named Peter Navarro. He's a professor out in California and an economic advisor to presidents in the past, and he is definitely a trade hawk. And he's one of the people that thinks that trade wars are indeed winnable, as the president said. So I think he's getting encouragement from that. He likes the idea. The president, I think, likes the idea that telling his base that he is sticking up for America through these sorts of moves is something that he enjoys. And we'd all cheer for anybody who can help champion American jobs, but at the cost that it might bear, I don't think this particular move is a good one.
All right, so what are we looking at on Wall Street today? I see that Target was down. It was down about more than 4% earlier today. What's active?
Yeah, Target's getting hit, but it's had a furious run. I mean, the stock was $54 in the fall, and it was $75 before this $4 drop today. The shopping season for them was not as strong as they'd hoped, and so there are some issues there. The market, more or less, like as you said, turned around when Speaker Ryan went back before the mics and was saying he thought that there was that flexibility that we spoke of about not being just dug in about going after trading partners and so forth. So overall, semiconductors are just red hot right now. Micron Technology, MU, we've been buying that. On Semiconductor, ON, and then Cree, which is a light-emitting diode kind of company. They've been just spiking today, and something might be going on with either merger and acquisition or some sort of new product, because you rarely see the stock move that much. It's up 11% today.
Was that the answer to my last question then? Is that what you're watching, what you're recommending?
Yes. Those are the three that I'm watching and trading today, sir.
Well, listen, great to talk to you again. I look forward to next week.
Thank you very much. Have a great one.
You bet. John Najarian. Watch him on CNBC, The Halftime Report. Also, follow him on Twitter. Good stuff there, at John Najarian.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:22 in the Wintrust Business Lunch here. Steve Bertrand, as we just heard all that, I've got to get used to these new bumps from Duffy and others. Oh, you know, we're doing a new thing, too, called Wintrust Wednesdays. And I want it to be driven by you, people who are running a business, know people running businesses. If you've got questions, business-oriented, banking-oriented, how to maybe improve things at your place of work, I'd love for you to text us your questions. And on Wednesdays, we'll get an expert, often from Wintrust themselves. So you can text us your questions at 312-981-7200 when they come to you, but best to do it during the show for Wintrust Wednesdays. All right, let's talk about Glassdoor Tuesdays, because on a phone line right now is Andrew Chamberlain, who is the chief economist at Glassdoor. Andrew, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve, it's great to be here.
Nice to talk to you. You guys are out with your monthly salary report, the increases, the decreases, and what we're making. Andrew, I wanted more.
Well, you got it. So for Chicago, the you got a median pay that's close to the U.S. average. About $56,000 a year is what the median full-time worker is reporting they're earning on Glassdoor today. And that's great. It's above the U.S. average of about $52,000. Unfortunately, overall pay growth in Chicago has basically been flat over the past year. We've basically had zero growth overall. And what that means is that there's certain jobs in Chicago where pay is picking up as the labor market improves, and then there's certain jobs that are staying flat or losing ground.
So on average,
flattening things out.
Nationally, right, it wasn't a big jump year over year. I think it was 1% across the board, higher in places like San Francisco. But not a big, but wasn't there a big spurt? Was it last summer? Or when was, we had a big jump, I think, not too long ago.
Yeah, there was. It was early part of last year, say in January, okay. February, we were seeing pay gains of 3 to 4%. And that's about health. That's healthy. That's what we should expect to see in normal times. What we see is that the wage growth we measure on Glassdoor, it's what people tell us they're earning, and so that doesn't adjust for inflation. So what you see is in some cities like San Francisco, you see much higher inflation because of a housing crisis
right
there and not very high rents. You don't see that as much in Chicago, and so even though pay is rising fast in San Francisco, in real terms, some jobs are falling behind there because cost of living is rising even faster.
So we shouldn't be too worried about the fact that we had, well, I mean, we want growth. It's not good that we had no growth. But if San Francisco is running past us, that's also indicative of the fact that it just costs so much more to live there and keeps getting more and more expensive.
Yeah, and also there is other good news. Like, pay isn't the only thing you should be looking at. There's also jobs, right? And so in Chicago today, we've got about 194,000 open jobs on Glassdoor, and that's many more jobs open than San Francisco. San Francisco's only got about 150,000, and the rate of open jobs in Chicago has grown by 20% year over year. So there definitely is lots of hiring going on. It's just where you stand in terms of pay really depends on what you're doing for a living.
Are there particular jobs that have their revenue going up faster than others when it comes to the Chicago area?
Yeah, so a couple jobs where pay is rising fast in Chicago include financial advisors. So with the recent tax cut bill, people are looking for tax advice from their planners, and they're seeing pay rise at 3.5% year over year. We're also seeing some healthcare jobs like EMTs, the people who drive ambulances, and medical technologists. These are like the tech workers of healthcare. They're seeing pay rise much faster than the national average. And then finally, truck and delivery drivers. So these are the people that are bringing packages to your home from Amazon. They're seeing pay rise fast as online delivery expands.
That's interesting. So even after the holidays, they see their money still going up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Amazon's not the only online retailer expanding. Walmart's expanding, as well as many smaller retailers. And even though they want to have automated delivery someday, today a person still brings every box to those homes, and that's creating a lot of jobs in e-commerce for those roles.
Andrew Chamberlain, the chief economist at Glassdoor. Check out Glassdoor. It's a really cool place where you can find out more about where you might want to work, learn about it, and as we've gone over these numbers, learn about not just, Andrew, it's not just about how much you're going to be paid, the benefits and things like that. People can learn about culture and all of that when they check out Glassdoor.com, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right, exactly. We've got all the jobs, and we help you make an informed choice by showing you where's a good and bad place to work and what the pay will be.
All right, look forward to the next time. Andrew Chamberlain.
Thank you, Steve.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
All right, so you do just about everything else with Amazon, right? So how about banking with Amazon? Is that a possibility? Maybe in a way. There was a story recently in the Wall Street Journal written by Liz Hoffman and others about that very possibility. Lynn joins us on a phone line now. Lynn, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. And so what is this idea now? Amazon's not really going to go into the banking business, are they?
Not the way you think of it. Banking is a very complicated, regulated corner of the economy, and there's lots of reasons that a big, fast-moving tech company doesn't want anything to do with it. But what they do want to do is twofold, right? They pay a lot of money in fees to process all of those transactions that are happening on their website, in their Whole Foods stores that they own, I mean, all over the internet. And so they pay credit card swipe fees, they pay bank fees. So one tangible benefit they can get here is if they can get people to use an Amazon account, bank account, to pay for purchases, that cuts out a huge expense for them.
So they would be contracting with another bank? Or I'm not sure I understand that. So they wouldn't really be the bank themselves, but they would find a mechanism to help them avoid the banking fees.
That's right. They're talking to banks, including JP Morgan Chase and Capital One, about effectively like white labeling a bank account. So the bank handles all the nitty gritty regulatory back office stuff, and Amazon gets to put like their cool logo on it and pitch it to its customers as just like another way that Amazon can be in your life.
Take over our world. So what's in it for Chase then if they do that, or for the other banks?
That's a great question. The short answer is that banks assume that Amazon is coming for them one way or another eventually, and it's better to be, you know, a partner than prey. And so, you know, there's it'll be a bit of an uneasy alliance, I imagine. But also remember that banks are trying very hard to stay close to the kind of customer that Amazon knows really well, right? That young, sort of upwardly mobile, tech-friendly consumer that doesn't necessarily want the same kind of banking services that their parents did. And so banks, like all other companies, right, are trying so desperately to stay in front of this consumer that Amazon has such a good relationship with. Yeah, so there is a bit of synergy there. A
couple of things then. You're right about that, because everyone's always afraid that Amazon is going to come in and take over the industry, whether it's prescription drugs or things like that. But it seems like in banking, they're a little bit more, they're seeking to be a partner rather than a complete disruptor.
Exactly right. I mean, when they bought Whole Foods last year, you saw the stocks of supermarket companies like plummeted.
Right.
You know, reports that they were getting into healthcare, medical supplies, prescription drugs, companies in those sectors, stock falls. So actually, bank stocks did well yesterday because I think that people understand that they're coming in, you know, as a partner. And part of that has to do with just how heavily regulated banking is. I mean, Amazon desperately does not want to be a bank. And so they need to find a way to partner with someone who can handle kind of the regulatory heavy lift of it, and get Amazon sort of the financial and customer benefits that they want.
It's not a perfect analogy, but in ways it's like, you know, Amazon has slain so many dragons that now they've gone to the banking dragon and said, rather than slay you, just let us in. And the banks are saying, yeah, well, come on in, you'll save us, we'll do that.
Exactly right. And if you're Chase, like, better us than with Bank of America
right.
or Citi. And so, you know, I think a lot of people have been looking over their shoulder, kind of seeing Jeff Bezos coming for their industry. And this is a way to at least be in control of your fate a bit.
Okay, let's go back then to those people who don't use banks the way I grew up using a bank, you know, and writing checks and all of that. This is a crazy question. It should be obvious, but those young people still have banks, right? There still is a need. There hasn't been something that's emerged sort of bank-like that's not a bank. They're still using banks for their transactions.
They are. There's, you know, you've seen a couple of different sort of ways that their habits have shifted, right? There's a lot of online-only banks. So Capital One has an online-only bank. Ally, Goldman Sachs has a new online-only bank that pay very high interest rates relative to other things, but, you know, don't have branches. You can't necessarily write checks. So people are being a little bit more selective about where they put some of their money and sort of the number of bank relationships they have. But the truth is there's actually just less and less of a need for sort of your neighborhood bank.
Right.
The big guys, Chase, Bank of America, Citi, Wells Fargo, are so big and they have so much, they have such a big footprint, so many wraparound services, the ability to invest heavily in technology, that they're actually just raking in hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in deposits, and they're getting bigger. And sort of so that sort of regional bank, that neighborhood corner where you go for your mortgage, that's a tough sell. And so there's some opportunities for non-traditional banks, companies like Amazon, to sort of peel away small pieces of that financial relationship.
So
checking account is like an interesting place to start. Most people have one and they use it.
So who's the cute one in this relationship? I mean, who's pursuing whom? It seems like the banks want Amazon. Amazon wants the banks.
So Amazon put out a request for proposals. That's how this whole thing got started. They put out a request in the fall, and a couple of banks just sort of responded and said, here's what we think we could do for you. So, like, make no mistake here. The banks are the hired help, and Amazon is the boss. but understanding that, you know, Amazon wants to get as far into financial services as it can without being a bank. And, you know, there is a bright line that they can't cross when they do that. So they're going to need sort of a thoughtful partner. And you can be sure there's going to be a lot of negotiation about the fees and the access and who controls the data and how this thing is branded. I mean, this is a big watershed moment for banking.
I read more at the Wall Street Journal. Liz Hoffman, a writer there. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You know, I was off last week. I want to say thanks to John Hansen, Suzanne Mushin, Amy Guth, who filled in. Certainly appreciated that. Had to take sort of an unexpected last day yesterday, too. But, you know, you might have heard part of my trip was I was out in Mexico, rural parts of Mexico, outfitting people with eyeglasses. I'm no eye doctor. I was doing what I could to help. But I was working with this group called, and I want you to remember this, iCareInternational.org. I as in you and me, the letter iCareInternational.org. And you can help them. You can help everyone, really. Look at your dresser door. Do you have an old pair of glasses there? Readers. I had no idea that reading glasses were in such need. You know, we just go to the Walgreens and pick up another pair. A lot of people can't do that, and so they need help with that. So here's what you can do. Look around your house. Find some glasses. I don't care who you give it to. Give it to the Lions. Give it to the Rotarians. Give it to your local optometrist. Just find a way to get them out of your house, because I've seen the magic happens when they leave your house and go on to someone else's eyes.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Minute, sharing the news and asking questions for small business owners. The insurance industry is big, so when a newcomer jumps into the ring and raises more than $17 million in less than a year, that might start to turn some heads. Kin is a new insurance company trying to streamline the clunky and traditional process of buying a policy. And current homeowners know, it's about time for a change. Maybe the best way to change the industry is to do it from within. Possibly an acquisition? And that just might be the case for the reputation management space, as Chicago-based Sim Partners just got gobbled up by West Coast-based Reputation.com. It's all in the effort of being a source for local information, since 82% of smartphone users turn to Google to search for local businesses. From a consumer's perspective, that might not be the biggest news of the morning, but in the B2B world, this shouldn't be overlooked. It's all about the long-term game. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, well, I was out of the country last week. I was still following the news, and man, it was all about tariffs, steel tariffs, aluminum tariffs, and things such as that. I just want to read you this one sentence. For every steel worker that may be helped by the import tax, there are over 38 workers in steel-using sectors that may be harmed by it. Those are the words of Veronique DeRouget, who is on the phone line now with us from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Veronique, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so I'm still trying to figure out who thinks this is a good idea. I keep hearing about it, and you know, I hear about one or two advisors in the Trump administration, but is this as lopsided an issue as it seems to be being portrayed, that there are so many more people who are against it than for it, or are we just being drowned out by one side?
So there really aren't that many people who are for this. The president, for sure. I mean, he's been consistent over the last 30 years. I mean, if anything, that's the one issue he's been consistent about. His Department of Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross and his advisor, Peter Navarro, are for this. And of course, all the steel executives who will see their profits artificially boosted. And you mentioned the one steel worker per 35 steel consuming industry worker.
Right, right.
I've seen an estimate by Harvard University professors that said that if you actually include really everything that consumes steel and the people who depend on these steel consuming products, you have a ratio of 1 to 80.
Wow. So there could be 80 people harmed in one way or another, less or maybe than those benefited, but for every one person who benefits.
And by the way, we know we know what these steel tariffs will do because we know what they did in 2002 when President Bush...
Veronique, you're reading my mind. I wanted to ask you just about that. President Bush then imposed tariffs, and what were the results?
So 200,000 workers about lost their job in steel-consuming industries. There was, at best, 3,000 workers who gained employment in the steel industries, but by most estimate, there were none. The production of steel remained roughly constant, has been over roughly constant. It didn't change the behavior of China and of the country they were targeted. And it was so disastrous in terms of you know, loss of job and because basically prices went up, prices of steel went up, that within a year they had taken down the tariffs.
But China is a bad actor here in this, right? I mean, it's not
as if... Yeah, but it's not in steel. Steel, I mean, 11 countries export more steel into the U.S. than China. China is a small player in the steel market for the U.S.
So the president's pointing to China, but there are 10 other countries who actually send more steel to us than they do.
Yeah, including Canada and Mexico and Canada and 6 of the 10 are our allies at NATO.
So the president seemed to be softening a little bit. The speaker's talking about it. Do you think that there's going to be a change in this policy, or do you think he's going to stick with what he announced last week?
It's hard to tell with him. He can go, if it were another issue, I would say he's going to drop it.
Right.
But it's this issue, and it's one that he really cares about. He's extremely misguided about it, but it's really one where he's committed to you know, punishing people and other countries. And at all costs, apparently. Because the question isn't even I'm not even questioning the bad behavior of other countries or even China in other circumstances where it actually matters more than for steel. But the question is, how do you do it? And steel and tariffs are basically the equivalent of punishing ourselves.
Right. Veronique, Veronique Dirigy from the Mercatus Institute. Thanks very much for joining us today. Let's check in again because I think we're not done here.